Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mindshifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mindshifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We welcome you to the show. Today's Friday, July the 18th, and I don't believe we're going to have Dale with us today, but this is normally Aramaic Fridays. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions, because then that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. Gail is on a well-deserved piece of respite. I'm not sure exactly how Dale does what he does. He travels all over the country, and he has 3 young children, a daughter that's about 3 now, I believe, and then a son and a daughter that are in their early teens. And how he keeps it up, I don't know, but he's somewhere out in the boonies, somewhere where he has no cell phone reception. So Aramaic Fridays, we'll certainly talk about the Aramaic and see where our conversation goes in that regard. I love to introduce, and if you're new to the show and you haven't heard this this analogy before, it is so perfect for what we get out of Greek translations. We did a little bit of work last week when we talked about the cause of war that's laid out in the ancient scriptures, and how things get changed, how they are shifted, and just the kind of things that we get lost in as people's minds inject into words meanings that aren't there, or take away from words meanings that are there. So an example, let's imagine that you happen to be the absolute best translator in the world of, let's say, Russian into English and English into Russian. And we're doing an intensive. You know, our intensive starts on Friday. This is Friday. Our intensive starts tonight. So let's imagine that last week I got an email from this gentleman from Russia who only speaks Russian, who wanted to come to the intensive. And I know that you're coming to the intensive as well, and you do speak Russian, and you're absolutely a master at it. And so I call you and say, you know, this fellow's flying into Chicago where you live, and would you mind picking him up, bringing him to the intensive, and then translating for him throughout the process? And then when you're complete, take him back to the airport and drop him off. So 16 days we spend together. We do this awesome fresh and raw food. You know, this fellow's from Russia, and he's used to eating a lot of animals and that sort of thing. And for 16 days gets to experience what total fresh and raw, vitalized, live food full of enzymes and raw, but just monumental flavoring and variety that you can't imagine if you haven't done something like this before. And he does that. He participates in the intensives, makes some awesome breakthroughs. So we get to spend a lot of time together in this intensive. And at the end of the 16 days, as you're leaving Heartland, I ask you if you would just share with him, you know, from my heart, how just awesome I think he is, and please tell him that I think he's really cool. And you turn to him, and you tell him that Michael thinks he's got a low body temperature. Now, you translated my words perfectly. There's certainly a context in which I would say you're really cool. That could mean that you have a low body temperature. But notice that saying that, when I say that I think he's really cool, translates nothing of what I meant. My words perfectly, but translates nothing of what I meant. It says nothing to say. And so the reason for that, of course, is because we've used an idiom. And the idiom is something that you can't translate. It's impossible to translate an idiom. You've just got to know what it means. If you don't know what the idiom means within its cultural context, you know, we had Archbishop Donald Gabriel Jolly on the show a few weeks ago, and he was sharing about a Chinese gentleman that had come as an exchange student from China and was going to a local university out in California, and Donald was housing him and feeding him while he was in university. And after just a few days in the classroom, this young man who was bright and chipper came home, came back to Donald's, and was just in a real upset and a real down space. And Donald said to him, you know, what's going on? What's happening? And he said, oh, it's school today. They insult me very deeply. Geez. You know, Donald's concerned because he's trying to, you know, give this guy the best impression he can of being here in America. So he says, they insulted you. What happened? What did they say to you? And the guy, they called me Cold Cowboy. Cold Cowboy? You know, I mean, what could that mean in this culture? What do you mean they called you a cold cowboy? He says, I looked up in dictionary. They call me Cold Cowboy. So, well, what exactly did they say? They said I was a cool dude. He looked up cold, dude, cowboy. He, in his mind, not understanding the idiom, I mean, he's got the words translated perfectly, but has no context for they were complimenting him on how awesome a guy he was. And so when we lose the idiomatic meaning, and the Aramaic language is a very right brain language, which means it's very symbolic, and it is rife with idioms. You got to know what they mean. And if you don't know what they mean, then you can't logically make sense of what's there. And so it's interned in all kinds of ways. The one that comes to mind right now before we go into seeing if Mark maybe is back with us today is the one where Yeshua says, if you want to be able to do what he does, if you want to move forward in the work he's teaching, he says, you've got to eat my body and drink my blood. And that has become something about wafers and wine. But if you go back to the Aramaic, and it's an idiom that's still in use, you know, many people think the Aramaic language is a dead language. It is anything but dead. But in that Aramaic language, they still use this idiom today. And what it means is nothing to do with drinking wine and taking in wafers as physical substance. But rather, it speaks of you've got to understand and integrate everything that I know about this process in order to be able to do what I do. So if I were, let's say, for instance, a fine cabinet maker, let's say I make the most beautiful and awesome cabinets in the world, and you come to me and say, Michael, I want to learn how to make cabinets like you. If I were Aramaic, I would say, well, then you're going to have to eat my body and drink my blood. And that wouldn't mean I'd serve you wine and wafers every morning. What it would mean is you're going to have to integrate the understanding on every level, not just in your head, not just in your emotions, not just on a piece of paper, nothing to do with your intellect. You're going to have to really, truly comprehend and integrate every nuance of understanding how this human energy system works. Men turn these nuances into religious dogmas and doctrines that usually, in order to keep people under control, find a place in fear and intimidation. You better accept this. Well, in everything that I teach, there's nothing for you to accept. In fact, I invite you to do the exact opposite. Don't believe a word I've got to say about anything. What I do invite you to do, and I love how Dr. Tim says it in his support groups he shared with us several times, and that is, he says, this isn't open to debate. Like, we could spend hours and hours and hours debating this tool and be in our intellects and try to figure it out. But rather, it's simply take the tool and use it and see what happens. That was the test. And in doing this work, coming out of the ancient Kabbalist manuscript, the first century Aramaic text, 164 AD, Aramaic text, it's about how do you put it to work? Does it work? And my part in the process as translation work was done from that text was taken into the laboratory, the classroom, and can we get it to work? If it doesn't work, throw it away. But here's what you'll find, is when you get back to every principle from the Aramaic, it will work in your life. And as you put it to work, awesome shifts and changes take place. So that's our whole idea of coming from the Aramaic, and the Aramaic is the root language of at least six of the world's major religions, and it's not a religious language. It's a physics language. It's a psychological language. It's a physics language. It's a genetic language. It perfectly embodies and describes things that we haven't even started to discover in so-called Western science. And when you recognize that and start to put it to work, awesome things occur. And in particular, the most awesome of all is that tool of forgiveness. The tool with which you go inside yourself and remove what never belonged. You don't have to believe what I'm saying about forgiveness. We live in a Greek culture. The Greek mindset came in on top of the Aramaic. And it's given us a story that goes like this. You know, you did something so terrible to me that you caused all this pain inside of me, but it's okay, my preacher told me I should forgive you, so I'll let you off the hook for that pain that's inside of me. And, you know, that's a nice thing to do, but it's got nothing to do with forgiveness. Vladimir Lenin said, the meaning of a culture's words, and you can destroy the culture. The culture of the original Christian teaching, the original teachings of the man named Yeshua, has been destroyed by the meaning of or the changes in word meanings. So many of them, and first and foremost, was the ancient Aramaic. That word, forgiveness. It means a tool with which you go inside yourself and remove hostility, fear, grief, rage, pain, drama, trauma, anything that robs you of your human life. And your human life is very easily defined and experienced. All you have to do is hold a newborn child. So your task, should you choose to assume the role of doing it, is going to be to remove everything from your structure that's unlike your original newborn state, unlike the active presence of love. That's what we're here to support you in. That's what the whole conversation's about. Nothing to believe. Take it, try it, see if it works. If it doesn't work, throw it away. But you'll find it works. It's pretty awesome. So, Jeannie, do we have Dr. Tim with us?
Dr. Tim is with us, and also Mark.
Okay, well, let's say a quick hello to Dr. Tim, and then we'll bring Mark into the conversation because it all started with a conversation Mark and Tim had in the show yesterday. Mark brought that forward. So let's just say hello to Dr. Tim and see what's beyond that young man's mind.
Good afternoon.
Well, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I'm beautifully, thank you. I was also remembering that when your friend Mr. Jolly was on the phone, the story he told about getting a letter from his mother, and
yes,
he dug this up years later, and the letter he got from his mother while he was in college was so striking because it said, I'm having a party tonight with my gay friends. And his point was that this is in the same culture, in the same language, in a 50-year time span, and the
right
meaning of that word had changed so dramatically that when his mother wrote him that letter, a gay friend meant somebody who was exciting, creative, enthusiastic, energetic, and somebody who would go to parties and would throw social events that were fun to attend. And now,
right,
of course, it's something to do with sexual orientation.
Yes.
So that, just, I thought that was lovely that he had the actual letter from his mother and he was sharing that. And
well,
it just kind of highlights
another,
for me.
Yeah, there's another little story that I like to tell in that context, a little thing that I made up to illustrate the whole idea of how word meanings, we have an understanding of them, especially when it comes to something more complex than a normal conversation. We understand it in this context because we have the brain cells for it, but remove it from this context, and the example I use there is, I'm going to describe a man's day at work, and we're going to seal his description of his day in a time capsule, and we're going to open it 2,000 years from now. Same culture, same language, but 2,000 years from now, let's see if you, being the person who's opening this time capsule, really understand what this man's talking about the way we would understand it today. So here's the story of his day. I went to the office this morning and found myself in a pickle with my boss, and she canned me. I was cleaning out my desk and had to stop and go to the can, came back, finished cleaning out my desk, went home. My wife was in the kitchen canning, said, help me if you can, and I said, I can't. Now, think about 2,000 years from now, understanding those nuances. And that's just a simple conversation. You take highly complex spiritual and emotional and mental and physiological and psychological and genetic and physics ideas, which the Aramaic describes perfectly, and let's see if you can bring them through the Latin and the Greek and the Old English and the Modern English. Let's see if you can keep them intact. And that's why we've worked diligently to go back to first century Aramaic meanings of the word so that we can actually understand the instruction set that the man named Yeshua gave us. Of course, the question often becomes, well, why would I want to understand what he gave us? Hey, I don't know anybody else that's pulled off what he pulled off. I don't know anybody else that's faced shredding his body to pieces and came out the other side unscathed. Seems like a pretty good guy that you'd want to know. You'd want to know what eat my body and drink my blood. You want to know all the nuances to be able to achieve what he says is achievable. And you know, there's also a conversation in the culture, which we brought up a little while ago on the show, of, well, yeah, well, there are a lot of people who are saying he never existed. Well, you know, that is a conversation, but that's just one that keeps people from confronting truth. The truth is, man brought forward some of the most awesome understandings of how the world works that there's nobody else on the planet who replicated it. And, you know, when he says in the Aramaic idiom, I am the way, the truth, and the life, nobody comes to the Father except through me, he's absolutely accurate, but he's not talking about his ego self. He's a man and his teaching were one. You know, he says in his own words, you can deny me, but you don't deny the one that I'm working to connect you with. And he says, I come to connect you to the spirit of truth. When that spirit of truth is active and alive in us, and that means the essence of truth is moving in us, then we're going to be taught things that are not intellectually sane in this material-oriented culture. You know, we have a culture that lives with material gods. Their god is money, the god is substance, physicality, which is a last end effect. And what Yeshua is saying is we got to get back and connect with the deepest end cause in order to change the game. And so we're here to support the changing of the game on planet Earth, that is, the removal of every dynamic. And Mark, we thank you for calling into the show yesterday and opening what you opened, and I'm excited and looking forward to hearing what you have to say about what your worksheets uncovered for yesterday, because this is so precisely in the arena of what we want to look at and what we want to deal with. And so, Mark, good morning, or good afternoon. How are you this afternoon?
Oh, good afternoon. Doing great.
I
worked it all night long. Yeah, I was in the throes of getting free of it, and then went to bed and got up in the morning, and it kind of just came to me like a bolt of lightning, especially in the context of what you were just sharing and with the words and the words, how I have used words to divide, apparently, the thought patterns in my mind and segment them. And so one of the things that, what I opened on the show yesterday was a power person dynamic about manipulation and a story about how Tim helped me see that I was actually manipulating my wife in order to get what I wanted. And you had suggested that came from the power person dynamic of my power person manipulating me. And we kind of were working through that. And I kind of had the insights as a child that I knew what was coming. I knew what was building. I could kind of foresee if I did this, 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 and this, it would lead to an action that would end up in me getting threatened or punished or disappointing mom or that kind of thing. And some of that's playing out in my relationship with my spouse and stuff. And so guilt and blame and the idea of being an idiot, had come up. So just, for context for anyone who wasn't listening to the show yesterday. And so here's kind of what I came up with. And I have literally a dozen pages, because I think I wrote for an hour and a half or 2 hours doing mind shifter kind of work. And the essence of it, if I could cull it down, it would be the division within the mind was apparent all through my life, but I wasn't willing to see it. I just became such a master at segmenting things that I could be one person in one moment, and then I could be a completely different person in another moment, apparently, at least in my mind. And in truth, other people may have seen me the same way, but I would segment things. And so I allowed myself to believe that it was okay to say certain things in one situation and another in another, and it was creating and facilitating this ongoing division or schism or schisms that were happening in the mind. And so as I was going through it, I realized, you know what? I'm not really divided, because I had believed for a long time that I had divided myself literally into these divided sense. It's almost like taking a map of the world, and the world is the world until you look at a map, and then there's all these lines that create divisions on them and segments where we have populations that either like each other or don't like each other, and they either integrate and get along or they end up fighting. And I had kind of done that in the mind. And so what I've been doing with the work is really unfolding that so that the map looks like a clean map and a kind of a purified map, and so that everybody kind of gets along in my head. And there is no one else in my head except for me, but it's just the perception of that. And so what I kind of came to be with this morning was an analogy or a metaphor that I thought, wow, it really brought it home for me. And it was this idea of a tree and its branches and leaves. And so the tree and the branch and the leaves are all one, they're all whole. But the branch has an identity as a branch. Picture what a branch looks like coming off of a tree. But it doesn't mean that it's separate and distinct from the rest of it, and it doesn't mean that the leaves on the branch are separate from the branch. They're all one. But I had even gone down to the leaf level, if you will, and created divisions in the mind where the leaves all had their own little identities. And so I could segment and say, well, that leaf's one way and that leaf's another. You get the idea. Mm-hmm. So as I was doing the mind shifter work, and realizing what you had brought up yesterday about doing the right thing for the wrong reason, I realized that I was doing the right thing for the reason I thought was right, but it wasn't consistent or congruent with what the tree trunk, if you will, believed. So I might have believed a certain thing out as one of the leaves or a branch, and acted from that belief system, but the core belief system of the trunk and the root system, the source of my identity of who I am in oneness with the whole, I wasn't congruent with.
Tell me more.
So I kind of had these separate belief systems, and so I'm collapsing the belief system so I can get back to the core root belief of just being the active conscious presence of love and allowing love to inform my actions without having to unwind every little nuance, but just say, okay, in each moment I'm going to choose to be the presence of love and allow love to inform the choices that are ideal for that moment for myself and everybody around me.
One refinement I'd offer, Mark, is that you don't want to get back to the belief that you're love. Because if you get back to the belief that you're love, that's going to be one more belief in your mind. You want to get back to the direct physiological experience of the active presence of love, where you are literally experiencing every cell of the trillions of cells in your structure plug directly into that active presence of love, and it's a physiological presence. And in it is an experience beyond anything your mind could imagine. When we're still doing it with our minds, we're still looking for carbon-based memory to understand or believe something, we're still locked out of the experience. And the idea of the forgiveness process is to collapse. You know, we've got a gentleman at Heartland right now who's there for the summer, and he kind of lived in the traditional world. He was actually a truck driver. His most recent job, he was working for an organic distributor of food, driving a truck delivering organic vegetables and fruits. And he'd injured his arms, and so he was off on disability, and so he came to Heartland. And back a couple of years ago, he had pneumonia, and they put him in the hospital, and he died. He had a clinical death experience. And when he had that clinical death experience, he said, all of a sudden, I experienced myself as the most awesome love that anybody could imagine and beyond any kind of intellectual concept. And then he said he was resuscitated. One of the interesting things was the instant he was resuscitated, there was no trace of pneumonia in his body, totally, completely. His lungs, what literally physically killed him, created clinical death, was gone from his structure by the bringing in of that literal higher energy that we're designed to be plugged into. Now, you know, people say, wow, maybe I should go create myself a clinical death. Well, that's kind of a risky proposition. But my understanding and my take with the forgiveness process, the reality management process, is that what it does is it, in the same way that clinical death collapses the output of carbon-based memory, forgiveness collapses the output of carbon-based memory, and when it shuts up, that's when we can taste the purity of being and bring ourselves back to the place where that becomes number one. And so it's to go beyond the believing it, because you can believe that you're loved. I can believe that I'm loved, but that doesn't give me the experience. It's like, you know, I can believe that chocolate coconut milk ice cream tastes awesome, but I can believe that till the cows come home, I don't have a spoon of it in my mouth, and I don't have the experience. To me, the goal is to create the experience directly. And then, and what my experience is over the years, like, for instance, Mick, who I was just sharing about, he and I, you know, I've had a similar experience, although mine didn't come from a clinical death experience, and so I could relate to everything he was saying. And I asked him the question, because when I had that experience back about 20 years ago, it took me everything that, you know, up to that moment had been an issue for me. I get upset about, I get angry about, I get frustrated about, I mean, literally everything. When I came through that experience, on the other side of it, it was like, I'm going to give this up for that frustration. I'm going to give this up for that anger. I'm going to give this up for that hostility. I'm going to give this up. You've got to be crazy. And it took me about a year, and I asked Mick the other day in class, you know, how long did it take you before you went back to anything that had meaning and was worth being upset about? How long did it take you to buy back into that? And he said it was about 6 months. For me, it was about a year before any of that made any sense whatsoever or was worth anything. And so now the work is moving back to where None of the hostility, fear, grief, rage, pain, manipulation, any of it has any meaning. The only thing that has any meaning is to experience functioning as the active presence of love. And to me, you know, when I had that opening, when I had that experience about 20 years ago, I'd been doing this work for about, 20-some years. And it was like, wow, this is, actually it's longer than that. The experience happened about maybe 28 years ago. And it was like, wow, I knew there was a reason for doing this work. How, this is so exciting. This is so cool. What a great place to live. And literally in that state, if I asked a question, there was a silent auditory voice that gave me an answer. And in that state, when I said, wow, this is so cool. I knew this was, there was really a reason to do this work. The answer that came back that, well, Michael, you've had a taste of it. And you could stay here if you want, but if your instrument, meaning your body, isn't ready, you'll burn it out. At which point I said, okay, I'll go back and do my work. And that's what I'm doing. That's what this whole body of work is all about, is to develop the tools and give myself and everybody connected with this work the experience of that deep taste, and then to work to the point where we live there 24/7, 365. That's one of the reasons why I was talking to you a few weeks ago about put Laws of Living in your schedule for this summer, because it's about going to that experience. And when we live in the world, you know, Yeshua says, go into the closet and close the door, take some time apart. When we stay in the standard world where we eat our standard foods and we live with people who are about the goals of the world, and that doesn't mean anything other than through the goals of the world. There's nothing wrong with the goals of the world. You know, it's about money. It's about power. It's about, you know, security. It's about sex. It's about, you know, whatever all those things are. They're all cool and they're okay, but they're not really consistent with living as the active presence of love. In the ancient teachings, they talked about seek ye first the kingdom of God, which is, you know, can sound like some mystical thing, but really what we're talking about is this experience we're talking about is seek first that experience. And then what it says is everything else will be made onto you. Your, you know, your financial life will be taken care of. Your sex life will be taken care of. You know, all the things that are of the world will be handled, but they'll be handled out of that connected space where you do everything for the right reason rather than, you know, doing the right things for the wrong reason, as we talked about yesterday, propitiation. I love T.S. Eliot. You know, that was a clue, you know, having developed this work and then run across T.S. Eliot's quote where he says, "'Tis the highest treason to do the right thing for the wrong reason." That's a beautiful piece. And so the collapsing until there's nothing left but the active presence of love. And then from that comes everything that everybody could ever want. Does that fit? Make sense for you?
Yeah, that was a great explanation, Michael. Thank you. I appreciate that. And I'm experiencing that more and more. And I feel like I do go back and forth a little bit. I'll have an experience or a direct experience for a duration of time, and then something like this issue will come up. And I noticed last night, actually, I haven't yelled at my children in a long time. And I was driving home with my son, and I was working this a lot. And we were at a baseball game, and then driving him home alone, and he was just doing something that was really triggering my irritation. And I snapped at him, and I, like, wow, that's so different than the way that I've been experiencing life. And so, like, yeah, that's not ideal. There's something going on with me. So we pulled over, we got a little ice cream, and I just breathed and let it go. He wanted some ice cream after as a reward for his game, which they lost, right. So it wasn't much of a reward, but it was enjoyable. And needless to say, when I get out of tune with the direct experience, it's more and more prominent in my life where I'm feeling like, yeah, that's not right. So I appreciate your explanation because it provides hope. too, that, you know, keep doing the work. And I will consider laws
exactly.
of living. And I'll keep going at it. And this issue that has arisen, you know, certainly isn't a tiny one. So I'm sure there'll be other layers of it that, you know, come up in the coming weeks here.
Were you able, in that the context of that experience with your son, were you able to model and share the whatever the stresses were that you were under? You know, it would seem like a perfect teaching moment to go, you know, here's how our minds work, son. When there's no stress, we do what we did to get along with our power person. When stress starts to build, we do what we did to resist and survive. And then when we become ultra-stressed, we'll do what our power person did to us that we hated the most. And, you know, son, I realize that here I am, not being perfect. I'm still working through it. I'm your power person, and I just did exactly what my power person did to me, and I want to apologize and clean it up, and I love your support in being able to do something different. And if you're doing something that's out of harmony with my wishes, then what I'm committed to is speaking to you lovingly, gently, and with respect. And what a way to open a space for him to be able to free himself now of those power person dynamics rather than, you know, having to have a family and pass them on to his children. It's a great teaching moment, great opportunity.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I said, word for word.
Awesome. How cool.
No, I'm kidding.
What
I'm kidding. I'm
give.
Kidding.
That was why I
pulled over, because I'm like, you know what, I need to take a breather here. And I allowed him to participate in it in a way that he could experience it, or that, at least the way I thought he could experience it. But, no, I didn't say all those words you said. That was beautiful. I said what I said, and it was including him.
Yeah. But taking the time and to model that, you know, you're dad and you don't have to be the perfect dad. You know, that idea about it earlier in the week about, you know, my parents were perfect and so I thought I had to be perfect, and to be able to model and own not being the perfect dad, and for your child to be able to go, whoa, dad isn't perfect? How cool is that? Maybe I don't have to carry around this perfection issue either. And, you know, I mean, what a great space to open in a child's mind to be able to be weak or hostile or fearful or whatever, and to know that there are tools to heal those things, and to see a parent who's supposed to be a god and perfect being willing to own that. Oh, here's the tool I use, son, when I'm overloading stress, and so I'm going to stop, pull over, breathe, I'm going to do some counseling of my goals, and, you know, hold a different space. What a great way to give a child a picture of how life can be, rather than, you know, the dynamic that's been going on in all of our bloodlines for 1,000 generations of craziness.
It worked. It works really well. I mean, you're right on it, and I do various versions of that with my kids, to be vulnerable. And when I demonstrate the vulnerability, you know, they open up and they release it, you know, any angst that they have, and they tend to be kind of in a support role for dad for a little bit.
Yep.
And that helps them feel more confident in themselves that, hey, you know what, not everybody is perfect, and not even dad, but he's willing to take ownership for what he, you know, what he did and his actions. And so it's teaching them how to be responsible, you know, for themselves, instead of projecting that out, like the other example I, you know, used in terms of snapping at him, which wasn't ideal. So he got to see, you know, it's really important for them to see that and participate in the process, so that they're willing to open up and start to use the tools in whatever way they're ready to use them.
Yep. 2,000%. Awesome. Congratulations, sir.
Yeah, thank you. And again, there's more there. There's more there. I'll be working, but I thought that it would be useful to give a call and let you know at least where I'm at with it today. And holding the space and ask that you guys hold the space that more layers can surface as they do. I used to go digging for this stuff, but now I just kind of know that the world will present an opportunity where it'll come up when it's ready to come up.
Yeah, to me, the difference between the old therapeutic model of I lay on the couch for 30 years and I look for the deep, dark thing that happened to me and then maybe my life will get better is so antiquated, as opposed to I realize who I am as love and I walk through life as love. And when something is delivered to me that brings up something less than love, then I do that piece of work. It just makes a world of difference. And my thought is that seeing as how when you introduced this yesterday, you started with a question that Dr. Tim asked you, that maybe Dr. Tim would have some input and maybe another question or two that could just move the process forward and or some more comments on the conversation so far and insight from his many, many, many years of awesome healing with people. Dr. Tim, do you have any thoughts to share?
Well, I think the first thing is to just echo what you both just said and cut in and say this yesterday or on Monday, but the idea that you are the dad or the mom and you have to be perfect is so hurtful. It is so false. And if any of us sit back and just realize, you know, ask yourself the question, Way of Mastery says, if you want a way to be humble, ask yourself, did I make myself? And, of course, the answer is no. I don't even know when I was made. And so if you're a parent and you're thinking, you know, I have to be perfect, ask yourself, am I really perfect? And the answer is no. So one of the most valuable things a parent can do is just be honest and authentic. And we talked about it a while ago on the show in terms of showing emotions. If there's a very intense event that happens and, you know, somebody loses a job or a friend moves away or a family member dies, and the parents walk around and say, I don't want to cry in front of my child, you set up a situation where the child is feeling what everybody else is feeling, but the child sees all the adults acting like they don't have any emotions, and so they think if they have emotions, they're flawed. And so it just creates a huge mess. So I frequently encourage parents to admit they're wrong, apologize. And if I admit I'm wrong because I overreacted or yelled at something my child did, that doesn't mean I don't give the child consequences for what they did or I don't hold them responsible. It simply means I do both. I apologize for my part and I hold them responsible for their part. And lots of times parents have wailing and gnashing of teeth in my sessions because they realize they've done this that wasn't optimal and they've done that that was horrible. And I tell them, listen, if you start to use these tools and you admit your part in things, it really doesn't matter what you have done or not done in the past that you think you should have, because you'll be able to give your child one of the best gifts he or she will ever get. And that's a living, breathing example that they're never too old to learn and change and grow and become the kind of person that they want to be. And the other thing I say is that I tell people that however much my children learn from me, 80% of it is going to come from what they watch me do, how they watch me relate to other people and relate to them and relate to my spouse. It's not going to come from the consequences I enforce or the lectures I give them. And so as a consequence of that, as a result of that, if I see my children doing something that I don't like, whatever I might do to hold them accountable for what they did, far more important for me, turn my focus inside myself and work to make sure that I become more of the kind of person that I want them to be. I handle my anger and my frustration in a way that I would like them to learn to handle their anger and frustration. That I openly express my appreciation, gratitude, and joy for other people the way I hope they learn to. express gratitude for other people, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then everything else you said, Michael, about integrating and about the point of this work is not to believe we are love, but to keep moving ourselves into experiences where we can experience things that go beyond words. We can experience the energies and the presence and the experience of life that words simply can't communicate. That would be my input for today.
Yeah. Awesome.
Michael?
Very cool. Yes, sir.
It's Rex. Hi, everybody.
Hey, welcome, sir.
And boy, what a wonderful program. I was on since the beginning as well, and just so rich and full of wonderful information. I'm definitely going to go back and listen again. And, Mark, thank you for stepping forward with your courage and bringing, you know, your process to light for all of us to learn and grow from and share it in the way that you have. It's just been so eloquent and wonderful. So thank you for that. And
Rex, I'd like you to just notice the smoke and mirrors aspect of that acknowledgement.
Okay.
And how in the last few days you've been so courageous in sharing with us your process. Has been, you know, when I think of the fact that you've been doing this work for 30 years and having reached this new depth that you've reached in your process, the courage to share it is awesome as a teacher. I really deeply acknowledge you for that. So just invite you to receive the same as you're offering to Mark.
Thank you.
You're here.
Well spoken, Bruce. Oh, no, it's Michael.
And Tim, I love your humor. And so, yes, thank you very much. I appreciate that, and I accept that fully.
You're accepting that, I'm going to cut you off, and I'm going to say,
please do.
I was listening Tuesday on the way back from, I was driving, and hearing your work, and in my head, when you were trying to decide whether to go for the anger at the doctor that was, quote, delivering you, or fear, in my head, I just kept saying, go for the fear, go for the fear. So the next day I was doing my energy work with my partner, and we were having a difficult time figuring out what was up for me that needed to be released. And again, we stumbled across what's one of the major themes in my work, which is, anyone want to guess?
Fear. No.
And so it created a tremendous space for me to open and do work for me on fear I have about all the stuff that's going on with the Ruka group and the stuff with moving my office and expanding and the partner's health and all of these other issues that clearly was related to your willingness to open up on the show.
Mm.
So my gratitude.
Wow, good job, Tim, and thank you for that acknowledgement. And saying it out loud is so helpful because for so many reasons, and it's one of the reasons I really am acknowledging you, Mark, and all of us. I mean, it's beautiful that we're doing, we're all teachers. All of us that are speaking right now are actually out there teaching the work in the world. And I think it just reflects to people, it's like it doesn't matter what position we're in, supposedly, theoretically, or whatever that quote position is. It matters that we're still in a body and we have issues and to acknowledge them and work through them. And I haven't had the level of pain that I've had. It's been over 10 years and it wasn't this intense for me. So I know I increased and upped my ante substantially. And I feel like I'm now moving through it and I'm able to move around. So that's a good thing. I was able to very, very gently get on my bike and ride. That was good today. It was a very casual ride, but at least I was able to climb on, and it was a little painful, but it's just about movement, and I know that'll help the process, and by continuing my inner work, and I also realized that, you know, I may not be done with it, and that's okay, and I may be done with it, and that's okay too, and it's just a resolve to continue staying focused on the process, using the tools, the breathing, the forgiveness, the tapping, all of, there's lots of tools, the mind goal management. I mean, it's just amazing how many tools, Michael, you've brought forth in your work, and then how many tools are available that work in conjunction with what you have brought to all of us, Michael. And Mark, back to you, I really just yesterday, Mitzi and I were listening, I can share this because we were listening to you share, and we were both going, wow, Mark, that's awesome. Good job, buddy. Oh, you're so cool. And this is just from a friend perspective, and I was looking at you and admiring you for coming forth, because you bring forth a piece that's so, I mean, we all have aspects of what you're describing, but it isn't very commonly talked about outwardly, because it's kind of got this schism attached to it that it's not bad, it's bad, we shouldn't talk about it, and so on and so forth. So thank you again for you stepping forward and so eloquently sharing your experience. And while you were talking about your son, I had an experience with Journey when he was about 14, I think, and pretty good sized boy. By that point, he was about the same height I was, or a little taller. And I had one of those moments where I was triggered, and I raised my voice and started yelling at him, and he interrupted me right in the middle of that, which took guts. And he said, "This is not okay. This is not okay." And each time I share that, I have more work to do around that, obviously. But my point that I really want to share with that is that it was so clear, and it was just so pure and clear, and there was pain there as well that he was sharing, because it wasn't the first time I had done it, sadly enough, and that was just me acting out my power person dynamic before I had actually integrated it to agree where I trust that I no longer have to do it that way, but if it comes up, I'll manage it and remember to breathe and do all the things you recommended, Michael, to Mark to do to his son and with his son. But the point was that it's just this beautiful thing, because they're courageous to stand toe-to-toe with that, and Journey was just a beautiful, courageous human being that stood up to me, and when he did, it was a really big turning point in my projecting on him, my anger, and those images that I made from the anger. So, Mark, that was resonated as you were talking, and I just, again, appreciate you and thank you.
And, Rex, thank you, Rex. My input would be that I hope if it comes up again, you won't manage it.
Yeah.
I hope you'll forgive it.
I heard that when it came out. Nice catch, thanks.
Yeah, I knew you caught it. You know, there's nothing we want to manage. You know, that's kind of, and maybe that needs to be one more of the pseudo solutions of the non-being mind and codependence. You know, aside from if I could just figure this out, if I could manage it, as opposed to I can't figure it out, I can't manage it, but I can forgive it, and so that's always to come back to. So, just a subtle little
excellent
thing, but to be important.
Well, you know, quite often, Michael, it's those little subtle edges that are the tip of the iceberg, kind of like what Tim was saying when he, you know, was listening to me tap into the fear. And, Tim, I did go into the fear, and that is what I have been really diving into. And it is, well, I have experienced it being scary, which is why I have, you know, in the past shoved it in into my tissues and so forth. And sometimes it can be painful when it's coming back out again, but it's okay.
Yes. Awesome. Well, I want to acknowledge the whole team. You know, we've got a big piece of the core team here right now with Tim, with Mark, with Rex, with myself. And so I just want to acknowledge the whole team.
Jeannie.
All of the work that everybody's doing. Jeannie's here. Maybe Michelle's on the show. You know, there are so many people that are just part of the core team. We just picked up Michael Coughlin this morning. He started teaching in Florida again with the support group there. He and Margaret
It's just awesome, the level of integrity and the level of people that are coming together with the willingness to do the work. And I personally am so appreciative of all of the support and all of the work that everybody's doing to bring refinement to refinement. You know, in the ancient scriptures, they talk about strength to strength. And this is for those who are new to the work. You know, you're talking, the people that are on the show right now have been doing the work for 4 or 5 years, 30 years, 10 years, 45 years, and that's what the progression looks like. So it's great to be able to bring it forward as we're doing right now. Awesome. So we are just delighted, and Jeannie, I don't know if anybody has a hand up or if anybody, Mark or Rex, Dr. Tim, do you have anything else to share before we take a look at anything happening in the chat room or hands up?
I'm complete.
Show's done.
Me too.
Awesome. I feel
all right,
complete.
Well, dear heart,
thank you.
Do we have anybody with a hand up? We've only got a couple of minutes left, or anything happening in the chat room to be aware of?
No, we'll just have a general conversation in the chat room. Michelle is listening, though, and says thank you for mentioning her as well. And nobody has their hand up, and we are down to 3 minutes.
Well, there are a lot of important people coming together to support and be part of what's happening, and it's just most amazing, and I am most appreciative, and we would invite you to bring a stranger to the show on Monday. We'll be doing parent-teacher talk. I think Suzanne is going to be back with us on Monday, and we'll be moving forward with parent-teacher talk Monday and then the show each day. If you're ready to take your work to the next level, I just heard from Michelle yesterday, and she is driving. You know, she drove down for several days of the Food Fund Forgiveness and Work, and then got in her car and drove back to Michigan, and is turning around, driving back today. If Rex hasn't caught up with you, Michelle, he's asked that you pick up the evaluation so we can mark them mechanically rather than have to put them in the computer, because we don't have a way to do that right now. To get the personal code evaluations marked for all of the prisoners, we'll get that done at Heartland. And so Michelle's coming with her daughter to codependence to interdependence. It starts tonight, and she'll arrive for tomorrow's class at 1 o'clock. If you're ready to take your work to the next level, you might want to be part of that, or the next session starts with why is this happening to me again, 9-day intensive, and teacher training for people who want to deepen their experience of the forgiveness process or who want to teach the work. Then we've got Laws of Living. So that's the summer schedule. Come and play. We appreciate you. And give the world the best gift you can possibly give. Have the best year yet of your eternal life. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com. Sleep.